One of the family.
The family. Dogs are a part of it and at the very heart of it. Nikki Campbell explores this wonderful world with the help of special guests and some other family members.
Welcome to this special episode of One of the Family. Right, I've got on this bit of paper a list of the people you're going to hear from. I showed this to Isla Campbell. This is what she said.
Stellar cast. I'm going to be honest.
Well, it has been the most fulfilling experience making these podcasts over the past few months. So coming up, a cavalcade, a celebration, an adoration of adulation. I've listened through to all of the interviews and extracted some of the most celebratory parts, just extolling the virtues of these wonderful beings. None more so than a great human being, Ricky Gervais.
I mean, they're incredible. They smell, they can smell cancer. They know when you're going to have a fit. They guard us, they guide us. We should be giving dogs medals every day for just being the... I know I was meant to make the case for cats, but I'm sorry. I love cats, but dogs. Dogs are proper members of the family. They are companions. They're incredible, and they really are our best friends. There is a magic that all a dog needs is a bit of companionship. When I see a dog that's just happy to be with its owner, just running along looking at its mum or dad every now and again, just thinking, the dog's thinking, this is my best day ever, every day. And I wanna be that happy. And looking at a dog makes me smile. I can't help it. I don't know why I'm so connected, but I wish I could bottle that. I wish I could bottle what a dog has and sell it as some sort of tonic, because they just make the world a better place. I can't imagine the world without dogs. They're incredible. I remember, right? I shouldn't tell this story. I had older brothers and sisters, and this is how... morality was formed in my family over animals. Everyone loved animals. I knew my family loved animals. And my brother, so he must have been about, 35, 40. He already had kids. And I remember two of his kids, when they came over to visit my mum, they came running in first. They were like 6 and 7. And they went, Nanny, Daddy punched a man in the face in the park. And my mum was like horrified. And then my brother came in and she went, you punched a man in the park? And my brother went, yeah, you keep the dog. And my mum went, oh, okay. Like, that was justice. In my show Afterlife, I made the dog save my life, both metaphorically and literally, because it's true. Dogs save our life every day.
It's true. And the super vet, Noel Fitzpatrick, saves dogs' lives every day.
The thing about dogs and cats that we all know and we all love, but you express it really well, dogs and cats, they smell the daisies all the time. There's no past, there's no future, and it is so beautiful.
And you're absolutely right. Animals don't linger on their past failures. They will like, you know what? I failed to get that big dirty ball out of the undergrowth yesterday, but I'm going to give it another go today, because that big dirty ball, that tennis ball, I know it's in there and I'm going to give it another go. And they're in the now all the time. And it's nigh on impossible to come in from work and you've had a bad day, your boss hasn't been great and something bad happened, and your dog runs around your feet or your cat purrs and goes burp, immediately your psychology has changed. And one of the greatest gifts that our companion dog and cat friends give to us is the ability to be in the present. And it's something that has become abundantly apparent during coronavirus, the psychological impact of loneliness and isolation, and again well proven that the companions, 95% of people in the survey said, yes, animals have dramatically improved my psychological status during lockdown. Well, wow, surprise, surprise, because every single day they improve our lives. And yes, we have a lot to learn about being in the present and being not too obsessed with planning for the future. And most importantly, and I found this in my own case, worrying about things that have already gone. You know what? There's nothing I can do. And letting go was a real tough thing for me. I was holding on to so much anxiety from the past. And I truly believe that if we could bottle that unconditional love of that nowness, we'd have you. Antidepressants would significantly decline in sales, and other forms of that we use to prop ourselves up in our increasingly stressful lives. But a dog might be the solution, and I've seen it frequently as the solution.
When I had my breakdown, I can't tell you how much Maxwell helped. He just seemed to understand. Dogs are so sensitive to how we feel. Well, Noel's little dog, Kira, was actually run over this year and she nearly died. But she made it through. And here he is, talking about her. What does she mean to you?
Before now, I would have said she was my best friend in the broadest sense. And I know you know this because you've got dogs in your life. And is it Maxwell, your Labrador? Mm. Yeah.
Mm.
What does she mean to me? She is my confidant. She is my companion. She is my trusted, loyal, more than a friend, because she is the one constant in my life for the last 13 years. As you try and build a life, and certainly Fitzpatrick referrals, the practice in which I work, and every, you know, that is my life at this point in time, and she's been there every step of the way, literally every step. Like, I have 6 feet, you know, she just is my extra 4 feet, and everybody loves her, but I adore her because I don't need to speak and I'm understood. I don't need to think and I'm felt. I don't need to get overwrought and I'm calmed down. And all of those things are in one little hairy bundle of love called Kira the Border Terrier.
One of the family.
And dogs are there for us in so many different ways throughout our lives. Here is the wonderful Gabby Logan.
Dogs are just tied up with so many different areas of your life, aren't they? And for Sydney, she was so precious because we couldn't get pregnant. And so we were trying to get pregnant. And somebody had said to me, you know, dogs are really good at like helping women to, you know, kind of fall pregnant because it releases these hormones of love and caring that, you know, somebody told me this, right? I know. And because you're spending so much time loving something that you're, you know, I was literally, Nikki, I would, if somebody had said to me, you eat cardboard for a week, I just wanted to, you know, I wanted to get pregnant and I love dogs. So I thought, well, this is perfect. This is, I've got an excuse to get a dog. And Kenny was obsessed with boxers and we found her in Cumbernauld. And so we had her for a year before we had the kids. So all those memories were tied up, you know, with us getting pregnant and then bringing the babies home from hospital and bringing her out to meet the babies, you know, because you're supposed to introduce the dog outside of the home to new babies so that they can welcome the babies in. And within about 10 minutes, she nicked two of their little kind of crib toys and buried them in the garden. And I didn't know whether that was a good thing or a bad thing. I was thinking, oh, she doesn't like them. And actually it was a good thing. She wanted to protect them. And she used to lie underneath their Moses baskets all day long. And if they made a peep, she would come and get me. And she just adored them. You know, she was such an amazing family dog. So she was involved in all of that. So when she died, all those memories come back, don't they? Of all those times that you were struggling to get pregnant, then you had a baby and then you brought them, you know, babies back. And all that was just evoked. So that was tough.
Sydney sounds like such a special dog. You know what? You never forget them, do you? But now at the heart of the family, it's Milo and Maggie.
Because like Milo's not bothered. He's very, if you don't like me, it's fine. I'm not bothered. Whereas Maggie's got this kind of, she's a people pleaser, you know, like she really wants you to, she wants to be happy. She wants everybody to be, it's all good. She loves fun times. You know, she's got this every day when she goes for a walk, it's like her first walk, you know, like she's springing up, kind of like looking at me, like was so excited that we're doing this again. We're doing this. I can't believe it. We did it yesterday and the day before that and the day before that. It's this beautiful enthusiasm and energy that is an excitement and, you know, kind of, oh, we're going to go down here. Yeah, we walk down here most days, you know, and she looks at you and that, thank you so much for taking me on this walk. I can't believe my luck.
Maxwell's groan of ecstasy.
I love to. I couldn't resist that, sorry. A little bit of a groan of ecstasy from Maxwell. I love talking to people who didn't really consider dogs before, but then were born again. Souls were saved and chewed. Here's Rebecca Front.
I'm so inspired, Rebecca, hearing your story of coming to dogs after initially being reticent.
Yeah, no, I have
a converted soul.
I've totally turned into, do you remember those French and Saunders characters who used to wear sort of,
yes,
A-line tweed skirts? Sort of, we'd always kind of, you know, be sewing up their own wounds because they didn't have time to go to hospital because who would feed the dogs? I've turned into that woman. It's quite terrifying how it's happened.
Finally, are we talking dog on the bed at night?
Occasionally, we try to be a bit restrictive about that. So, because actually, I don't sleep brilliantly when he's on the bed. It's lovely, but he tends to want to lie on top of my ankles, which then means that I can't move in the middle of the night, and I get a bit claustrophobic and slightly overheated. So it's not ideal. So he sleeps with us probably about once every 10 days or something. He comes upstairs, and he's always incredibly excited.
Absolutely. When I sleep with Maxwell, we're in the spare room. But I find it very therapeutic because they're so good for the mental health. And I just, when I'm a bit not quite right, just to have him beside me.
Yeah.
Is he up on the sofa?
Oh, God, yes. Yeah, has been from pretty well day one.
I can't understand people who say, oh, no, no, never up on the sofa.
I know. No, so he's got to be next to me when I'm watching telly. He just has to be. I can't relax and concentrate otherwise. But I would just on your thing about mental health, actually, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because actually we originally said, yes, he would be allowed on the sofa, but he wouldn't be allowed on our bed. You know, and he had a perfectly good cage thing to sleep in when he was a puppy. And then we got him a lovely dog bed and blah, blah, blah. So we were quite determined he wasn't going to be on our bed. And then actually the first time he ever came up to our room was because I was going through a bit of an anxiety thing and I was having a panic attack. And Phil went downstairs and I thought, I assumed he'd gone down to make me a cup of tea or something. He came back up with Bailey and put Bailey on the bed. And immediately I started to calm down.
Here's my Five Live friend, Nihal Athanayake, with a beautiful story. And also you can hear in the background, if you listen carefully, interruptions from Maxwell and my daughter, Isla, as well. Both are one of the family.
So I think shortly, I mean, probably less than an hour after Luna was put down, my wife said, we're not getting another dog for ages. I can't do this. I can't do this again, right? That's Lyra there with a new toy. Does Maxwell want to come back in?
Hey, you want to come in, boy? Come in, boy. Come in, boy. Hiya. You've got to make up your mind.
So she said, no, we're not doing this. I was adamant, even before Luna had passed, that we'd put her down, that I wanted to get one as quickly as possible. And less than 24 hours after we'd put Luna down, my wife, Isha, just said, I can't be in this house without a dog. No, this house is not a home without a dog in it. The love, the energy, the silliness that a dog brings into a home is something that I, you know, it sounds horribly patronizing, but I feel quite sorry for people that don't have a dog in their home. Now, there's a lot of people who can't, for obvious reasons, have a dog in their home. But having had one and not had one, you know, there's just this void, you know, because every time you open the door, you know, your kids, they just walk past, hey, dad. Go upstairs. This thing runs at you. Its tail is wagging. Lyra's ears go back. And we didn't have that anymore. And, you know, it compounded our sadness, Nikki, the fact that there wasn't a dog in the house anymore. So we set about straight away, pretty much. And my wife, it gave her something to focus away from the grief of losing Luna, because it's grief. I mean, let's not dress this up as anything other than grief. You know, I lost a parent, so I know what grief feels like. And it was grief. There's no question that her presence in our house was sorely missed. So we wanted to get back on it straight away. And it was quite interesting because I received that you, like I, talk a lot to our Twitter followers. We have a lot of conversations with them. And there was that body of opinion. There was like, I waited 6 months, or I waited a year and it was too long. We never got a dog again. We couldn't go through it again. But there was actually, I felt, an overwhelming thing saying we got a dog straight away. You know, we couldn't, which is not to betray Luna. You know, that was another thing we had to wrestle with. You know, we didn't want to betray, we weren't replacing her.
No, that's it.
We just wanted to give love and be loved by another dog who will never replace Luna. Lyra won't, but then Lyra's her own dog and she's got her own personality. We're already seeing that her personality is pretty different to Luna's. So yeah, we got on it straight away, Nikki.
How's it been for the kids?
Just amazing. My son's quite stoic, so he's really only broke down once. My daughter, who actually spent much more time with Luna, I mean, they were real buddies, you know, just like the Philip Pullman books, Luna was her demon, you know, who'd wander around behind her all the time. And they would just lie there for some time on the carpet, just looking into each other's eyes. I mean, they had a real kinship, Luna and my daughter. So it was just great. And she, you know, my daughter cannot walk past another dog. She just simply can't. It's impossible for her without her asking the owner, please, may I say hello to your dog? It is not. Yeah, right. And Ricky Gervais is the same as well, I believe. You know, she just can't do it. So to have a puppy, because she'd never had a puppy, right? You know, Luna was full grown by the time she was conscious enough. So to have a puppy is amazing. She's kissing this dog. It's extraordinary. And it soaks up, Lyra soaks up the grief without you transferring the grief. So it's perfect. You know, it's amazing. It's a kind of, she's like a lighthouse guiding us safely towards somewhere that, you know, coming out of a very, very dark, horrible storm that we were in after we lost Luna. And Lyra has been that. She's been a lighthouse for us all.
Oh, I love talking to her. All these people who love their dog so much. There's Nihal. People are so emotionally intelligent and articulate about their dogs, aren't they? This is One of the Family. Got a stellar cast still to come. Check out the YouTube channel. Leave a review. Subscribe. Like it. We're on Twitter. Well, I'm on Twitter. The wee thing is a bit of an exaggeration. And also Instagram. Coming up, something special.
One of the Family.
Let's talk about love in this special One of the Family podcast celebrating those who celebrate dogs. And the big question, for all dog lovers, do they love us? Well, science now has the answer. First of all, we hear from Alexandra Horovitz, globally recognised dog expert, and then we hear from Victoria Stilwell, globally recognised dog expert. Do they love us?
If your dog is acting as I expect Maxwell is acting, which was with highly enthusiastic greeting, looking for you when you're not about, wanting to keep your company, you know, suffering our touch of them constantly at our whim, wanting to play with us or walk with us, returning to us, looking to us. I mean, there's not really any other way to describe that than love.
Well, of course my dog loves me, but how do you actually know? Is your dog just trying to Is your dog being nice to you because it just wants you to feed it? Or you give it a comfortable place to lay its head? How do we know that dogs actually love? Well, now, because of science, we know unequivocally that they love. And it's that ability to love which has made the domestic dog so successful living with humans. We like to be loved, and they have that ability and that capacity to love us. And so, you know, studies, one of the more famous studies that were done in Sweden. There's a doctor out there who's, it is called the Oxytocin Queen. She studies oxytocin in humans and the response of oxytocin to from human to human. And she did the same study with
Can
dogs.
I just say, the Oxytocin Queen, my goodness me.
Yeah.
She sounds like, you know, she's on a high all the time. Right? She's full of love. She's the queen of love. She's the queen of hearts.
She is. Well, she certainly has done a lot of studies on how dogs respond to us when they see us at this, when we've been away from work, at work, and we come back at the end of the day and they see us. Their excitement to see us and their desire to be with us. And it's chemical. They're getting a surge of oxytocin in their bodies as we are too. And so it's studies like that validate what we dog lovers already know. Yeah, of course our dogs love us. Now we have scientific proof to back it up. For one being to actually render themselves vulnerable by falling asleep in front of another. We're all pre-programmed to survive, right? So it's dangerous. Sleeping can be dangerous in some environments. But the dogs trust us so much that they're able to sleep and feel comfortable and safe in our presence. I think that is amazing testament to their trust and this incredible relationship we have.
Victoria Stilwell. Before that, Alexandra Horowitz. Yeah, oxytocin. It's a bit reductive to call love oxytocin. Clearly, oxytocin is a symptom, not a cause. But you know what? All you need is oxytocin. And then there's Chris Packham. He needs no introduction, but he's getting one. A fearless commando on the front line of the war for nature, for animals, for all we should hold dear. Scratchy and Itchy were dogs he loved and lost. And here he is on preferring dogs to people, which I kind of understand sometimes.
I think of their total commitment and that total return of love and a desire to make sure that they live long and healthy and happy lives, you know, all of the time. And there was nothing that I wouldn't do for them in order to satisfy those requirements. Nothing at all. I was the joke, you know, throw myself in front of a train for those dogs. And I did financially, and I did in terms of my time commitment and everything else. You know, I would move heaven and earth to make sure that they were happy on a daily basis. And that's enormously rewarding. You know, the joy that they brought me, I called them my joy grenades, Itchy and Scratchy, because every time I took them out and I let them off their leads, they just exploded with a desire to revel in the world. You know, and sometimes when I released the lead, I didn't feel like that. I felt that the world wasn't a terribly great place. But, you know, they would just run for the sheer joy of running, and that would put a smile on my face. And I remember some of the darkest moments taking them to a beach and letting them run in a completely deserted beach. And you know dogs, they have a way of running which is smiling, and they just cantered over their sand, and it, for that moment, you know, it completely, it was so completely uplifting that it probably saved my life. You know, I just sort of thought, wow, look at that. They would just make me laugh out loud at nothing, like a child laughs at nothing. They would make me laugh at nothing because they were just so happy. That's a very powerful reward to have for an investment that you make in another species of animal. And it's one that, you can get that. Of course you can get that from human relationships, but not on demand always. And yet on demand, Itch and Scratch brought me absolutely unparalleled joy.
He now has, does Chris, two dogs who are called, right, it's a cultural reference,
understood only perhaps by people of a certain age, Sid and Nancy. And they are beautiful. You know what? You got to have a dog. Over to you, Nicholas. And where would we be without dogs? Yeah? Where would we be without dogs?
Well,
God knows.
This morning I was out in the woods, you know, and they were there and it's sunny and it was quite hot. So the pace of the walk was a little bit slower than it can be. And it's really quiet at this time of year. Most of the birds have stopped singing, of course, in August. And the colours have all changed. But we are walking through that dappled light, you know, where their black pelt goes grey to brilliant white. And then I sat down at a certain point and they came up and sat alongside me and their tongue was so brilliant candy pink against their ivory white teeth. They look so young at the moment, you know, Sid and Nancy. And we were in the middle of nowhere, there was no one else there, and the three of us were happy. Can't beat that.
One of the family.
And now, two devoted dog lovers talk about two dogs called Snoop, both of whom have crossed the Rainbow Bridge. Gary Lineker talking about his Snoop, but first, Sarah Cox talking about her Snoop.
By the time he left us, I had three kids, so, you know, he'd stationed himself every mealtime. He'd learnt that to be underneath a high chair is the place to be. And Bassett's very food-driven. I mean, he was completely ruled by his belly. Some great stories of him eating, like, an entire, like, round sort of Christmas camembert thing at a friend's house once. Because he wasn't very tall, but his back was so long that he was almost like Go-Go Gadget Dog, where he could put himself on his hind legs and, like, go... and reach whatever he wanted to. And... he got this cheese and wolfed the lot, then immediately vomited it up, and it sort of settled back into the same shape.
Ate it again? Did he eat it? Did he eat the vomit again?
He tried to start eating it. I got it off him, and a sprig of rosemary. It was good to go. Nobody was any the wiser.
When they're gone, it's just it feels so empty, doesn't it?
Felt so quiet because we've got wooden floors here. Hounds have obviously got big old nails on them, claws on them, so you could... Everywhere I went, there was this constant... It was like a really pleasurable sort of doggy tinnitus because I'd just have that noise constantly. And when the other dogs aren't here now, it just feels so quiet. Sometimes I'll go away with the kids and I'll take the dogs with me. And Ben, my husband, he's like, God, it's just so quiet. It's horrible, you know, because... I mean, not so much the kids. It's all right to get rid of them for a couple of days, but it's like with the dogs not being there, you know, there's a real heart is missing from the house.
He loved the ball, and he was a brilliant catcher as well. He could leap up and catch it anyway. He loved doing that. And, yeah, that was absolutely... In fact, by the end, I couldn't throw anymore because I had tennis elbows. I had to get, you know, one of those little flicker things. Which he loved, and he bounced, and then he never tired of it. He'd do it all. He'd just keep going for it. Keep going for it. Great, much more stamina than I ever had. That's for sure. And they know when you're not feeling very well as well. I just know that. You know, you get a cold or something, or you feel bad, or you could, or even if you're a bit emotional about something, it's like they know they're there for you. They're right by your side in those circumstances. Obviously, they're incredibly intuitive. And you know, they have different senses that, you know, well, they have different senses, but strong senses in, you know, in terms of smell and other things. So, but yeah, they're adorable. They're adorable creatures, and they're just I think it's that unconditional love factor more than anything else that is so incredible about them, and the absolute devotion and loyalty to you.
And that lovely face of the Labrador.
Oh, there's his face. I've got a picture of him over there. It's two pictures of him over there, actually. And it's one of those, a bit like the Mona Lisa, wherever you're in the room, it just looks like he's looking at you. And you keep expecting him just to do that little head tilt thing every now and again.
Yeah, I know it. I can see it. Now, Shakespeare, as we celebrate dogs, Shakespeare was a bit iffy about dogs. And no doubt they were a bit sniffy about Shakespeare, because back in those days, hygiene, you know. So I spoke to the doyen of the English language, Susie Dent, about this. First of all, though, a great actor friend of mine, Mark Morahan, with a little bit of Shakespeare. From Midsummer Night's Dream, Mark Morahan, and a piece by Theseus.
My hounds are bred out of the Spartan kind, so flued, so sanded, and their heads are hung with ears that sweep away the morning dew, crook-kneed and dew-lapped like Thessalian bulls, slow in pursuit, but matched in mouth like bells.
No, I'm sure it's right. And you reminded me of the word flew, which is great, or he in Shakespeare did, F-L-E-W, flued, yeah. So the flew is the large, really big chaps, the cheeks of a like a bloodhound. Those kind of really floppy things that you see, those are flues.
So for you, how would you complete this phrase? What word would you use? Dogs are...
I would say dogs, can I change it slightly and just say God, dogs give respair. And respair is one of my favourite ever words, and it's quite a recent discovery. All too rare, now obsolete. Respair means fresh hope or recovery from despair. And that's, to me, what they are. They just constantly give you optimism and hope that the next day will be better and that they'll be there.
Susie Dent. And here is that fantastic comedian, Kevin Bridges.
We always say you would love to have a conversation with your dog, you know, just to ask it a few questions, just to ask them what they think. You know what I mean? Are there dreams? Like Annie's really bad for snoring. Like it's like I never knew dogs snored, but it is like so loud. But it's quite soothing. If it was a person snoring at this volume, you would be going mental and waking them up. But for something, it's when she starts snoring, it puts me into a more sounder sleep. You know, I find it quite relaxing. It gets me to sleep, just listening to how good a sleep sounds. I mean, she's a good advert for sleep. You're just going, that sounds amazing. And I would love to know what they're dreaming about. Like, if you could see your dog's dreams, I reckon they would be pretty sort of hallucinogenic experiences. Probably just gigantic tennis balls getting chased or whatever. I would love to see inside a dog's dream.
So the day you got Annie, what was that like?
We'd seen the profile picture, and we were told that she had a lot of health issues. So she was in Cork, I believe, in Ireland. And then we got told that a couple from Newbury were going to adopt her. But then she got brought over to Newbury and she needed loads of operations. She had loads of health concerns. And I think the couple, for whatever reason, decided it was going to be too much upkeep, vet bills and stuff like that. So they knew that we were looking for a Labrador, and she got brought up to Glasgow, got her operations, and then they told us that she had like alopecia. I don't know if this is a result of like mistreatment in the past or whatever. She had alopecia, like another skin condition, bronchitis, a bit of arthritis, pancreatitis, anything-itis. Annie's get every itis going. So we still decided, as soon as we met her, we're like, right, she's a one-off. And then she got the medical all clear with a few medic. She's always on some kind of medicine, Annie. And then that was it. We meant to pick her up. They give you like a couple of hours just to make sure you're compatible with the pet, you know, and just in case there's anything from the past. Like some of the pets in the Dogs Trust don't like being in male company for whatever reason. That maybe, you know, so a guy's been bad to them in the past or whatever. So they're just checking stuff like that. They're very professional, the Dogs Trust. I think their biggest fear is somebody adopts a dog, gives it a second chance, and then bring it straight back. So the dog just ends up demoralised or whatever. So that all went good. Got her home, and then that was it. She was just so hyper. I think it was a mixture of excitement and just like finally being in a home. And then she had that kind of puppy nature. That's what made us think like she was only maybe one. You know, because people always ask your age, and they say between one and two. So I'm worried that she's going to be eight when I hope she's just seven. You know what I mean? It's getting to that stage. Like, I don't know, it's a bit morbid to think how long have you got left with your dog or whatever. I think everybody does have that sort of process in their mind. So she was just hyper puppy-like, and it's never quite left her. She's obviously a bit more grown up, but there'll still be days when she just gets herself wound up into these frenzies, excitement still chases her tail some days. So she's always been a kind of puppy at heart sort of thing. So I pretty much that excitement for the first days carried on through her whole life.
And she trusted you from the off, did she?
Right away. But then Annie would trust. I've had to leave her outside the bank or the post office sometimes, and you come out and there's a crowd of five people and she's on her back getting her belly rubbed. And so I think Annie would trust anybody. We always say if this house was to get broken into, Annie would probably a rub of the belly and she would probably show them, I think this is where his watch is. And I'm pretty sure his laptop's up here. As long as you're rubbing her belly and you've got some chicken.
Yeah, and you love her?
Of course, aye. She's adorable. Everybody that meets her loves her.
Making this podcast, one of the family has made me and the rest of the family think very, very carefully about rescue dogs. And we've made our decision. That's the family plan. Next time, hopefully not for a while, we're going to get one. Here's a final word from Ricky Gervais.
The dog is a great responsibility. A dog, to me, is like deciding to have some children. And if you're not set up for it, you shouldn't have one. And that's a hard message to get across to people when I'm trying to tell people to adopt dogs, but I want to go, but not if you're shit. Not if you're a shit person. I mean, it's exactly the same.
And there ends the One of the Family celebration of dogs, this special episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Our knowledge of the animal kingdom is still so shallow, isn't it? So I want to end with a lovely poem. It's read by Mark Morahan, written by John O'Donoghue. It comes from his book, To Bless the Space Between Us, and it is entitled, To Learn from Animal Being. Thank you for listening.
Nearer to the Earth's heart, deeper within its silence, animals know this world in a way we never will. We who are ever distanced and distracted by the parade of bright windows, thought opens. Their seamless presence is not fractured thus. Stranded between time gone and time emerging, we manage seldom to be where we are, whereas they are always looking out from the here and now. May we learn to return and rest in the beauty of animal being. Learn to lean low, leave our locked minds, and with freed senses feel the earth breathing with us. May we enter into lightness of spirit and slip frequently into the feel of the wild. Let the clear silence of our animal being cleanse our hearts of corrosive words. May we learn to walk upon the earth with all their confidence and clear-eyed stillness, so that our minds might be baptized in the name of the wind and the light and the rain.